Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken. You know, Ron, let's change it. Given the fact that the focus of the week has been on something else, let's change this. Okay, all right. Welcome to It's All Palin from NPR News. I'm Ken Reardon.
And I'm Ron Elving. And let's talk about what everyone else is talking about, Ken. Charlie Gibson. Sarah Palin. What do we think?
Well, what's the difference between Sarah Palin and Charlie Gibson?
Can I interrupt you just for a second?
Sure.
Look me in the eye.
I am.
Can you look me in the eye,
yeah.
Look the country in the eye, and tell me you're ready?
Wait, is that the Elving doctrine?
Are you ready?
I am. And why are you wearing lipstick?
Are you ready from day one?
Well, yeah. What about Harry Belafonte's day O?
What?
Day.
Harry Belafonte was ready from
day
O.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, you are such an old person. Let's listen to the answer to the question.
I do, Charlie. And on January 20th, when John McCain and I are sworn in, if we are so privileged to be elected to serve this country, we'll be ready. I'm ready.
And you didn't say to yourself, am I experienced enough? Am I ready? Do I know enough about international affairs? Will I feel comfortable enough on the national stage to do this?
You have to be wired in a way of being so committed to the mission that we're on, reform of this country and victory in the war. You can't blink. So I didn't blink then, even when asked to run as his running mate.
You blinked.
You blinked. Actually,
I saw you blink.
Actually, if you watch the interview, if you watch it on World News Tonight and Nightline, she did not blink throughout the whole thing, talking about being committed.
She's wired.
If there's nothing else, you can say about Sarah Palin, she is completely confident. She showed no self-doubt whatsoever. I think Charlie Gibson mentioned the word hubris, which,
yes.
Of course, that was Humphrey's first name in 68.
That's right. Hubris Humphrey.
That's correct. So I thought it was just very interesting that she, even though she wasn't completely confident in all her answers, she didn't know what the Bush Doctrine was. She didn't know the name of her running mate.
Did you think that Charlie Gibson was bringing up sort of his, shall we say, 50-cent, 75-cent vocabulary here, trying to show off his collegiateness, his little half-shell glasses, using words like hubris, existential, using words like Bush Doctrine?
Experience.
These were things that he was kind of hoping she might not recognize. Was he not? Was that not the intent?
I think those people who liked Sarah Palin before and like her still probably saw Charlie Gibson as somebody who was trying to show off all he knew and all that he, that he tried to give if not a gotcha question, at least put her on the defensive. She did have some common sense answers, I thought, for example, does she support U.S. incursions into Pakistan without Pakistan government permission? Well, that's the U.S. policy. So he seems so crazed that anybody would support that, but that is U.S. policy.
You mean that is what the United States is doing right now?
Right.
It is U.S. policy in the sense that we are doing it. Are we also acknowledging that we're doing it, or is it something that is somewhat extra legal at this point?
Well, that's a good question, although the New York Times said that U.S. officials have acknowledged they are doing that. I don't know if they've...
New York Times mentioned no names.
Right.
So it is not official U.S. policy to be doing this,
but we're doing
apparently
it.
Vice President Palin. President Palin would be willing to make that official U.S. policy. Did she not say, I think at some point or another, that all means necessary would be justified?
Well, that she did. And that was the most striking thing that came out of it for me is when Charlie Gibson gave the scenario, if, let's say, Ukraine and Georgia are members of NATO and we provoked Russia.
Which she advocated in the interview.
As,
she said they should be
As does Vice President Dick Cheney. So I think Republican vice presidents like to do that. But, and then he said if it provoked a war, and she said,
perhaps so. I mean, that is the agreement when you are a NATO ally, is if another country is attacked, you're going to be expected to be called upon and help.
If they were in NATO, what happened in Georgia last month would have been the start of World War III.
Exactly. Or worse.
Yes, or even a higher number.
Yeah. So I thought that she was very cavalier with that answer, saying, well, if it comes, it's almost like Groucho Marx in Duck Soup. You know, if it's war, it's war.
It's war, it's war.
Exactly.
Exactly. I was thinking of Duck Soup myself.
And it's war! Gather the forces! Harness the horses! It's war!
Well, Ken, have you ever traveled outside the country?
Yes, I've been to New Jersey.
I think that counts. Have you ever traveled inside the country?
No, but another thing I thought that was interesting is that they're still trotting out the line that because she's a governor of Alaska, she has insight into Russia.
Now, insight out to Russia. She can see it across the Bering Strait. She said, you can see Russia from my state.
I mean, that's like putting lipstick on the Bering Strait, as the old expression.
As the very old expression goes. But if she can see Canada, if she had foreign policy experience.
But you know what? She did say one thing, you know, when Charlie Gibson asked her about meeting foreign leaders, and she said, look, if you go to previous running mates in the past, many of them have not met
foreign leaders. Heads of state.
I don't even remember if George W. Bush had much foreign travel experience before 2000.
Envoy to China?
No, I'm sorry, George W. Bush.
Oh, the second Bush.
She made the point in the interview with Charlie Gibson that vice presidents, running mates in the past, have not had a substantial foreign policy experience, have not met with foreign leaders.
Oftentimes. How about the military experience of being the commander of the Alaska National Guard?
She has used that as one of her qualifications, although as far as I know, she has never had
reason. As far as anyone can ascertain, she has never issued an order with respect to the Alaska National Guard.
Right.
So that would be essentially a ceremonial position.
Right.
Sarah Palin.
Ceremonial
position. Okay. All right. So on the surge, she said she had not been focused on the war in Iraq at the time that it began. Is this correct? I mean, are we understanding this? This was the source of her uncertainty about the Bush Doctrine, that she had not been particularly focused on all these issues when the Bush Doctrine was promulgated, another Charlie Gibson word, in September of 2002.
She did say she hadn't focused on the war. Yes,
that's right.
That's
at the time that it was beginning, right. Because she was running for lieutenant governor in Alaska in the fall of 2002. And, of course, she had lots of other things on her mind as well. But she was apparently not that caught up in, or at least according to her, not that caught up in all the debate over whether or not we should go into Iraq. Should that trouble people?
Considering the fact that everybody else in the country certainly were eagerly watching that debate in the Senate and the House over whether to go to war or not. So I thought it was pretty interesting. I don't know if she just lost concentration during that answer. I thought that was a very surprising answer, given the fact that everybody else in the country was certainly watching intently what Washington was going to decide about war with Iraq.
Can you imagine somebody, say, for example, in 1968, saying that they weren't particularly focused on the Vietnam War at the time that it was escalating in 1965?
The only difference, and I'm not making excuses for Sarah Palin, is that the draft was in 1968 and everybody was, perhaps the potential for everybody being affected. But at the same time, Sarah Palin did turn around and makes the point that her older son, Track, is about to be deployed to Iraq. And
so she's focused on it now.
Now, yeah.
But she wasn't necessarily at the time that it was a major policy question.
At least in that answer on the debate, yes.
So is it a subject to be brought forward and talked about? Is it a fair subject for discussion to ask whether a person who is, shall we say, in and out of focus about national affairs, sometimes kind of interested, sometimes focused someplace else, is adequately prepared to be leader of the free world in 2009?
This question wouldn't be that important except for the fact that she's running with a person, in all frankness, is 72 years old. The actuarial tables suggest that he may not live to 100.
He would be the oldest person to have been elected president
for the first time. Exactly. And he has had skin cancer in the past. So, I mean, I don't think it's a media elite decision to focus on her qualifications. I think Charlie Gibson, to his credit, did not focus on the stupid, silly, inane stuff like the lipstick, like her daughter, like.
No, I thought it was a highly substantive interview. And the reaction, by the way, of the the McCain-Palin campaign people, I'm sorry, some of whom worked for George Bush, and so we kind of think of them in those terms, was that they were giddy about how that first phase of the interview went. Giddy with approval, very, very happy about it. And my initial response was, I think you could see this with some positives and some negatives. Why would they be quite so giddy? And it occurred to me that what they were mostly happy about was not the appearance of Sarah Palin, but the appearance of Charlie Gibson. He was the perfect personification, the embodiment of the Eastern media establishment, with the disapproving way that he seemed to be a stern father talking to his daughter. That perfectly fit the narrative they're trying to set up, which is the stuffy old Eastern windbags are talking down our Sarah, and she's America.
But again, I mean, I know that you're saying that with somewhat tongue-in-cheek, and perhaps that's how the McCain campaign really sees it, but I think that Charlie Gibson, performed exactly as he should have. I think it was courteous. I think it was respectful.
Exactly as he should have, from whose perspective?
As a journalist.
Was he not essentially straight from central casting?
Well,
and was that not what the Republican operatives were preparing all of this were after?
Well, he could have been a different kind of a journalist and talked about me and I and all the silly stuff. I think Charlie Gibson still has a quite, perhaps it's maybe Washingtonian language I'm speaking here, but I think that most people feel Charlie Gibson is a serious journalist, not a showboater, and I think, he came off that way. But at the same time, if there were some questions about the Bush Doctrine and he just sat there with his arms crossed and said, let's see, why can't you answer that one? I wonder if McCain people or Sarah Palin supporters saw that as part of the elite media trying to do a gotcha.
How about this issue of talking points? The sense that she was prepared for every answer with a flat phrase that she was going to repeat. I'll use, for example, the discussion of Israel. This was her answer when she was questioned repeatedly about how she would view Israel striking Iran.
We are friends of Israel, and I don't think that we should second-guess the measures that Israel has to take to defend themselves and for their security.
So if we wouldn't second-guess it and they decided they needed to do it because Iran was an existential threat, we would be cooperative or agree with that?
I don't think we can second-guess what Israel has to do to secure its nation.
So if it felt necessary, if it felt the need to defend itself by taking out Iranian nuclear facilities, that would be all right?
We cannot second-guess the steps that Israel has to take to defend itself.
What I thought, I heard a lot of answers that seemed very programmed, very repetitive to the word sometimes. I thought that that she could have done what Hillary Clinton always does. Well, it's a hypothetical, and there's no reason to answer that. I thought Hillary Clinton dealt with that kind of question very effectively. But I thought the fact is that here we are again talking about war, that, well, you know, if Israel felt that Iran was a threat to its survival, again, as with the answer of Russian war with Georgia or Ukraine, I thought that there was a cavalier view about war, and I thought that was the alarming part of the interview.
One moment in the interview that I thought was an attempt at a gotcha was the playing of that tape from her addressing her former church and talking about the will of God in Iraq and so on. That was introduced very portentously. It looked kind of grainy. It looked like kind of a Jeremiah Wright sort of situation they were reaching for. And in the end, it appeared to me that ABC had flat misinterpreted what she was saying at the church, and a release later on from the campaign of the full transcript of that sermonette or whatever you want to call it that she was giving in the church that day seemed to indicate that, just as she said, she was advocating the Abraham Lincoln position that we shouldn't invoke God as being on our side, but pray that we're on God's side. All right. We have to look at some other aspects of this presidential election. Yes. No, we must move off this subject. For example, all right, this is a little known fact, but I'm going to reveal it now. There is a vice presidential candidate on the Democratic ticket.
Wait.
Joe, I'm going to give you a... No, it's not Joe Lieberman,
no.
But it is Joe. It's Biden. Joe Biden from Delaware.
Oh.
He is a senior senator. He is the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee.
Right.
And, you know, the truth is he hasn't completely disappeared. In fact, he's been running around the country running... running around. He's been having some problems.
You know, there's a thing that somebody sent me this week from YouTube, and here he is in a speech where he's having this, I think it was Pennsylvania, where he says, State Senator so-and-so, you're a great guy, you know, stand up.
Chuck, stand up, let him see you. Oh, God love you. What am I talking about?
But, of course, he's in a wheelchair.
What,
he's talked about Sarah Palin up. Being the lieutenant governor of Alaska. He's talked about himself being the presidential candidate, not the vice. He called his running mate Barack America at one point.
Yeah, he's done that a couple of times.
Yeah.
I think that might have been a good name change.
Actually, it's Barack Hussein America.
All right. And he also at some point said that he thought Hillary Clinton might have been a better VP.
That's the most amazing thing of all, because a lot of people still feel that way, or at least a lot of Hillary people feel that way.
Oh, of course they do. And a lot of people who weren't Hillary people have been saying, golly, if he had chosen Hillary, this whole Sarah Palin thing wouldn't have happened.
That's true.
Although it might have. And then we would have the contest between the vice presidents totally eclipsing the contest between the presidential candidates. But that's a Maureen Dowd fantasy. We don't have to go there. Let's move on to looking at the overall picture here. If Biden isn't getting much attention, let's face it, on his own, neither is John McCain or Barack Obama. But those are still the other candidates, and we still have a national election. What are the polls telling us, Ken?
I think they say that they're free, according to Gerald Ford.
Yes. Well, let's...
No, okay.
What are the national public surveys of opinion telling us?
I'm so sorry. What's interesting, and we've seen this from the moment that the Republicans left St. Paul, is that there has been a spike in the McCain numbers. I mean, suddenly McCain is trusted.
Yes, he is now up as the person people trust to handle the economy.
Now, of course, there was a USA Today Gallup poll that was a little out of whack. It had McCain up by 10 points shortly after the convention. But if nothing else, the Washington Post, ABC poll, many of those Wall Street Journal
NBC,
polls. Exactly. They
right.
all seemed that it's certainly the gap that was between Obama and McCain, with Obama in the lead, has certainly narrowed. And
well, Obama got a bump, but a small one, out of his convention,
right.
apparently about 4 or 5 points. That's been obliterated.
Because the next day, very smart.
The very next day,
John McCain
practically,
Sarah
as
Palin.
The speech was still resounding through in Vesco Field at Mile High, we got the Sarah Palin phenomenon.
Right.
So the bump that Obama might have had was obliterated by this other. But they haven't exactly run away and hid. And in the key states, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, Missouri, et cetera, the list of 10 or 12 we've been talking about now for months and will continue to talk about for the last 7.5 weeks, in those states, it remains a very close race. And in fact, Obama's ahead in more of the swing states than McCain is. Is that going to change next week? Is the Palin phenomenon going to push all those swing states in McCain's direction?
I suspect not much is going to change until September 26th, which is the first debate. Of course, you have three presidential debates and the VP debate on October 2nd.
Which may be the most watched of the four.
Absolutely. So obviously, there's a lot that can change, but there's no question that McCain-Palin has moved up in the polls since the convention and in the past week. We're only talking about a week since the Republican convention.
That's pretty.
I suspect that Obama will be more aggressive.
If the issue is change.
Or if the issue is the war in Iraq and food prices and gas prices, then the issues are supposedly on the Democrat side. And I would suspect that the Democrats will focus on that, not try to deal with the Sarah Palin phenomena.
But the personality war that had been, to some degree, the ground on which Barack Obama was strongest. And beat Hillary Clinton on the personality front. That war turned around dramatically in the last 2 weeks. And that's really what has set up the McCain-Palin ticket to be competitive nationally and possibly to seize the initiative going forward.
Absolutely.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/elections.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR News.
They're our next-door neighbors, and you can actually see Russia from land here in Alaska, from an island.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? I have always wanted to have a neighbor just like you. I've always wanted to live in a neighborhood.